The Angel by Steve Lambert. Hurry, hurry, hurry. Why? Why did he always do this? He'd given himself plenty of time, for once, left his flat to walk to Susie's place through the cemetery. Yet here he was, legs whizzing, eyes locked ahead. Slow down. This was the Bath Road. There was scenery, of a sort. He glanced through the window of the tattoo studio, hoping to see a black-haired gothic girl. Not today, alas, then stopped outside the motorbike shop. Beautiful machines, yet he was the last person who should buy one. He'd put his foot down and never stop. His view of the cemetery gates was blurred by traffic. He punched the button on the crossing and waited. And waited. Where was the green man? The signal refused to change. The traffic was relentless. Ooh, a gap, like the parting of the Red Sea. That lorry was too slow to be a threat, surely. Go for it. And he did. And the lorry, perhaps fueled by resentment, picked up speed. He ran across its path as the noise of the engine filled his ears like speaker rattle. Then his feet hit the sanctuary of the pavement as the vehicle rumbled past, his breath clouding in the winter chill. Close one. He stepped through the gates between the calming presence of the east and west lodges. Arnus Vale, coated in snow. For a cemetery, it was a real survivor. It had got through some sticky patches over the years. Now here it was, with a welcome to all, a much-loved haven in this bustling part of town. He needed to head diagonally right, towards the gates into Cemetery Road, not far from Susie's. But he had time for a stroll, to take in the wintry atmosphere, and think. He shunned the more direct route, the path to the right, past the tomb of Raja Ramohan Roy. Instead, he swung left, past the notice board, logs for sale, visitor times, watch out for adders, and the square stone set in the ground like a board game. He tried to ease his pace, but the trouble with walking slowly was it made him want to smoke. Still, he was winning that particular battle, down to one or two a week, or three, or four, nearly there. He patted the lighter in his top pocket, always there, just in case. One step at a time, easy does it. Susie was teaching him to take things more gently. Cooking, for example. Alone, he'd chuck something together and gobble it down, hardly tasting it, saving time. For what? But with Susie, in her steamy kitchen, as they scraped and cut vegetables, sipping tea, or wine if they were pushing the boat out, chatting and smiling, there was something meditative about it. He paused to look at the Anglican chapel up ahead, then looked right to a bench with a boot scraper next to it. He lifted his heel, muddy, perhaps from landscaping outside the cemetery, where he'd escaped the lorry's wrath. He scraped his shoe, then glanced down at the inviting bench. What is this life if, full of care, we have no time to sit and stare? Or something like that. Too right, mate. It could have been written to admonish him, but it was too misty and damp for seated contemplation. There, poised above the graves lining a hedge, beyond which lay a garden of rest, stood two stone angels. He preferred the one on the left. No offence, love. It reminded him of Susie, in that it was perfect despite its imperfections. The tip of a finger was missing from the hand thrust heavenwards, the sleeve of the pointing arm gathered below a blackened elbow. Feet bare below a long gown, eyes downcast and apparently closed, though you could never be sure with angels. Small nose, lips slightly pursed, wings at rest, curving down to their feathered tips. Yes, if he wasn't spoken for. But it'd never work out. He leaned forward for a closer look. Nothing dodgy. Her neckline was too high anyway. And as he did so, the angel did something he wasn't expecting. The fact she did anything at all was a surprise. He suspected she hadn't moved for years. But now she leaned forward, lowered her right hand towards his top pocket and snatched his lighter. Then, the cheek of it, she resumed her original posture, as if nothing had happened, as if butter wouldn't melt in her mouth, which it probably wouldn't, the only giveaway being his lighter glinting in her stone fingers. He'd been put in an awkward spot. How did one remonstrate with an angel? Careful not to dislodge the edging on the neighbouring graves, he inched forward to reach up and reclaim his lighter. But the angel did something even more unexpected. Her wings unfurled and stretched, then she rose into the air, hovering a few feet above her perch. Then she drifted along the path, past a wooden box for litter and a sign pointing to the Mary Carpenter Memorial. Then she went left, between the entrance to the Garden of Rest and a memorial for those who died in the Second World War. He didn't seem to have a lot of choice. If he wanted his lighter back, he'd have to follow. And the angel, as if confirming this, beckoned with the fingers of her free hand. At least, that's what he hoped the gesture meant. On she floated, to a path that forked up to the right, past a broken black headstone. He followed, his eyes being caught by the headstone of a teenage private, a member of the Gloucestershire Regiment who fell in the First World War. Although the angel's wings were outspread, they did not appear to beat to keep her aloft, unless they were moving extremely fast and there was some sort of hummingbird thing going on here. Perhaps she was supported by some supernatural air current he could not feel. She stopped and hovered above a stone on the left. Then she started right, up a track that started directly opposite. He paused at the headstone, which was carved with an anchor in tribute to a Norwegian seaman, then climbed the four stone steps that led up the next track. Up he went, past headstones wreathed in ivy. He hopped over another path that cut across the track, then continued up, past the grave of John Owens, warden of Bedminster Parish Church, on the left. He crossed a road within the cemetery. Richard Smith Road, he believed it was called, remembering it from a guidebook of Susie's, and continued on up the track. He was a bit out of breath. The angel hovered a few yards away, as if waiting. She could easily outstrip him, so there was no sense wearing himself out. The angel fluttered over a cluster of graves. As he approached, she rose further into the air, beyond his reach. Two rows of three stones each. Sisters of Charity, Deus Est Caritas. What did that mean? God eats carrots? But he knew, from somewhere in his past, God is love. The angel had gone. Where was she now? He turned. In the distance he could see the blue ITV West sign and red traffic lights fractured through the naked branches of the poplars. Beyond them, the roofs of houses rose to the south. Instinct told him to climb further. He passed a grave with the name of Lewis, then a rattling and clanking sound could be heard as he approached the cemetery's edge. At his feet lay several flat stones, almost submerged in the ground. No flowers or tributes here. He stepped forward so he could see the industry spread below. The clanking was that of a digger shifting back and forth, and sun glinted off a distant train sliding silently through the city like a snake. Sun? Its light was warm. At his feet, a patch of snow dissolved and the soil softened until its surface erupted with red, yellow and white flowers. What was going on? Climate change, sure, but this was ridiculous. He retraced his steps a dozen or so paces to a path that started by a stumpy metal block marked with letters, a double J and double I. As he went up this path, inscriptions flashed by him. Redeemed with the precious blood of Christ, departed this life in loving memory. And the gravestones seemed to lean back as he approached. Some were scattered amongst the trees, like a graveyard of graves, as if a giant hand had reached down and flicked them about in a macabre game of subutio. A flicker of light caught his eye. It was his lighter burning in the angel's hand, as she hovered above a metal post similar to the one he'd just passed. Then the angel swooped down the slope, and he followed, turning left, almost colliding with a robin weaving low through the graves, as if showing off. Above the rooftops of houses whose gardens backed onto the cemetery, the sky was clear blue, the sun bright and warm. But below him, in the lower part of Arnisfail, a white wintry mist covered the headstones like a mass of cobwebs. At the bottom of the slope was the road that cut through the track he had earlier ascended. The angel hovered there, waiting, taunting. As his feet hit the tarmac, the angel swooped up towards the gates leading to Cemetery Road, where he'd been heading in the first place. He wiped his eyes and blinked. Where was she? The angel had gone again. This was too much. It was tempting to head on through the gates to Susie's flat, but he couldn't go there without the lighter. Perhaps the theft — that sounded harsh, the purloining of sounded better, even though he suspected it meant the same thing — perhaps this lighter business was symbolic, a test of his resolve. Susie had given him the lighter for his birthday. A beauty, an act of generosity that had taken him aback, because at the time they'd not long met. Frankly, it had frightened him. In fact, he'd almost given it back. I can't, it's too much. Luckily, he hadn't said that. Still, it had raised the stakes early on, and he'd become sucked into something he didn't really understand. But he was in deep now. He was in all the way. As he followed the angel, he looked at the headstones lining the road. Treasured memories, a beloved wife, called to rest forever in our hearts. These reminders of his mortality were making him wheeze. He eased his pace. Even though theoretically he was involved in a chase, some things were best done slowly. In the kitchen. The bedroom. Easy, Tiger, Susie would say. What's the hurry? We've got all afternoon. All night. There were so many reasons he mustn't let her slip from his grasp. The gates to Cemetery Road lay ahead. The two double ones were shut, but the single gate lay open. Suddenly, the sun guttered and went out like a candle. A chill descended, and the single gate squealed. It was shutting by itself, followed by a heavy clicking sound. He rushed to it. Locked. What was happening? What time was it? He looked at his watch, but it must have stopped around the time he was entering the cemetery. He pulled out his phone. No signal. No way of alerting Susie. No way of calling for help. He was trapped in a cemetery after dark. Behind him was what looked like a derelict house, an old lodge, the top lodge he thought it was called, whose windows had been replaced by concrete blocks and whose walls were covered in graffiti. In the dim glow cast by nearby streetlights, he could see a shape moving out from behind the lodge. Then a tiny flame flickered in the darkness. There she was again, and off again she went, along a wide path or road that led into the heart of the upper cemetery, the top plateau. He passed a sign apologising for any inconvenience, and a pale grave marked with the name of Coma, and continued along the route that flowed around a tree set in a circle of grass. The lighter flame flickered, leading him through the dark as the path curved to the left. The headstones on one side faced him, but those on the other had turned their backs, some of which carried a single surname to summarise what was over leaf. The sight of the lighter made him crave a cigarette. Pity he hadn't brought any matches. He was giving up, remember, but he couldn't give up on the lighter, Susie's gift to him, despite the fact she disapproved of him smoking. Her shy smile as she'd given it to him, wiping her blonde hair out of her eyes. A generous act to encourage a practice one disliked. A sign of affection. a sign of love. He needed the weight of that lighter in his pocket, a talisman. It was the one thing that, ironically, gave him the resolve to kick the habit. The path flowed around an oval of grass, to the left of which was a stone anchor lashed to a cross. These anchors seemed to get everywhere. Something glittered on a grave. He bent to look. A tiny Hello Kitty emblem. He was really tired now, but it was too cold and damp to sit. Snow, which had all but evaporated elsewhere in the city, still clung stubbornly to the path, grass and trees, as if the cemetery preserved its own climate, reining the weather to an easier pace, as if saying to the snow, "Don't go. Just yet." The little flame danced through the air, guiding him like a firefly. Sounds drifted. A scratchy old record, the cry of a street vendor, children playing, then the boom of artillery. And a flash of fire from a missile exploding lit the haggard face of a soldier, just for a moment before he faded into the dark. An eerie afterglow seemed to hang in the air, illuminating dying flowers on cellophane, a little wooden fence around a grave. To the left, tower blocks loomed in the distance. The lights of cars were strung in front of them along the spine road. Nothing strange about that, except that the lights were not moving, frozen and blurred in the dark. Leaves fluttered down in front of him, curled like brown, withered hands. But it was winter, not autumn. Was the cemetery haunted by the ghosts of seasons long past? Further on, he glimpsed what looked like an angel or cherub kneeling, set back on the right, grounded, one of its wings having been broken in half. The flame drew his eye once more, seeming to bounce from stone to stone. Words from the inscriptions were aflame, peeling off the stones like flaps of molten metal, rising and mingling with each other, the phrases dancing in the freezing air like a 3D film. For his country, in God's keeping, in Christ shall all be made alive, until eternity dawns. A dog barking, perhaps from the neighbouring Arno's Court Park, shook him from his trance. He blinked, and the glowing words faded and withdrew to their original places, until the graves were dark and still. He almost blundered into a tall memorial, the cross of sacrifice, which grew out of the middle of the path, embossed with a dark sword, and just avoided treading on a wreath of poppies at its base. To his left were neat rows of headstones, two long, one short, Sailor's Corner. The stones were pale and small, unassuming given the sacrifice of those they honoured. The ages shocked him. He'd always thought of war as a young man's game. But that wasn't the whole story. 45, 55, 68. He walked along the path towards a low stone wall, as if he were a giant passing a line of ships. The names, so evocative. HMS Drake, Glendower, Valkyrie, Victory, Attack. In the midst of life, we are in death. He reached the low wall, which was topped with curved brickwork. Which way now? Then, to his right, the lighter flame flickered, urging him on, and he headed towards a patch of blue graffiti further along the wall. The toll that war had taken on those lying here haunted him. He was 32, admittedly still young, but he'd done absolutely nothing compared to them. Yet there was one good thing he could do, and he'd been planning to do it today. He and Susie had talked about it often enough. At first, in that haze of post-coital benevolence, they'd discussed it theoretically. What if... how do you feel about... maybe... He'd already given notice to his landlord, and Susie's place was big enough for the two of them, just about. So, he was moving in. But for what? So that's what he wanted to do today, raise the stakes, raise the spectre of the dreaded M word. The angel's shape was visible against a faint glow in the sky. She was lurking behind a tree growing close to the wall. The lighter flames seemed to spread, illuminating four trunks that resembled the legs of a huge beast. Then the flame shrank to its usual size and danced away, luring him to a gap in the wall. He looked down. Was it his imagination, or was the air getting brighter? Below him lay a series of paths that seemed to zigzag downwards. From the gap in the wall, he descended a few yards. To his right, he saw what looked like a row of very long, lighted candles. Then the flames suddenly went out, leaving wisps of smoke, and he saw that the candles were, in fact, a set of black railings that bordered the cemetery. On reaching them, he turned left down the slope. His nose itched and he sneezed. The air was warmer and he could smell grass. Was it spring now? He could see the park beyond and the Catholic cemetery next door, as the railings gave way to a stone wall. The sky was filling with dawn light and he could see the distant signs, Bath Road Motorcycles, Bath Road Massage. At the bottom of the slope, the little flame flickered and winked, tormenting him. He couldn't give up. He couldn't leave without that lighter. One resolve reminded him of the greater one to which it was linked. He and Susie had already taken the first steps. They spent so much time at each other's places that their pretense at needing their own space had been exposed as emotionally and financially unnecessary. Marry me. The words flew out of him as he descended the path. Marry me, Susie. He said it aloud to the hundreds of thousands of cemetery residents, every one of them, young and old, with their good innings or columns cut short, lives they'd barely begun at all of whom he could trust not to scoff or tell him he was making a mistake. The possibilities of life had made him fearful of decisions, because one path chosen excluded another. But he loved Susie. Yes, he was sure of that. Was it that simple? Could anything be that certain? He took reassurance from the inscriptions he had seen around him, loved and remembered. He gave his life, missed beyond measure. No half measures here, no quite fond of, or he wasn't a bad bloke really, or I wish she'd given me back that 20 quid before she kicked the bucket. No, he was surrounded by love. Eternal, forever. The back of the Anglican chapel was below him. He joined a pale gravel path which curved to the chapel's front. It was cold again. All trace of spring had vanished. His shoes crunched on patches of snow. The path seemed to guide his feet, as if expecting him. All paths ended up in the same place. The cemetery had been telling him this all along. Life didn't last forever. There was only one destination. One had only to look around to see that. So he should make the most of it, seize the day, make his life whole. Marry me. As he reached the front of the chapel, he could see the bench with the boot scraper up ahead. The angel hovered above it, flame in her hand, lighting the way for him, the path to his future. Marry me. Would he ask that today, before they'd even moved in together? Yes, that was what he was going to say, because he loved her, simple as that. He blinked. Yet again the angel had gone. So had the flame. On he walked, towards the grave with an empty space from where the angel had taken flight. Where was she now? Why was she doing this to him? Angels were supposed to be messengers of God, weren't they? Guardians of the dead, comforters of the bereaved. Surely this type of behaviour wasn't in an angel's remit. Was he about to go round in a circle? Tired and unable to think of what else to do, he trudged on, lost in his thoughts about Susie. Sure, he was scared. Committing yourself to someone for the rest of your life. 50, 60 years. He shivered. Even the thought of an 18-month phone contract gave him a nosebleed. But no, he wanted to do it. Because? It was simple. Sometimes life could be as simple as that. He passed the wooden litter box once more and again turned left up the path between the Garden of Rest and the Memorial to Casualties of War. On the left, past the memorial, was a cedar tree whose foliage rose like a giant green helmet. Just beyond it was a grave which bore a book carved of stone. In loving memory of my dear husband, at rest. And as he watched, the stone, like the angel tormenting him, came alive. The pages of the book began to flip of their own accord, and the same carved word was repeated over and over. Rest, rest, rest. Rest, rest, rest. The message was clearly meant for him. He turned, and there was the entrance to the Garden of Rest. The black gate was now closed, but as he came near, it swung open, inviting him in. The garden was shrouded in wintry mist. Near his feet lay small tributes, flowers, cards, Christmas wishes, jolly Santa. The ground was covered in snow, marked by the dotted pattern of a bird's feet. The mist was thick. It was hard to see ahead. He walked deeper into the garden until a glimmer of light slowed him. Hovering before him was the angel. She bent over and laid his lighter on the stone on which she stood. Then, rising to her full height and spreading her wings wide, she hoisted her arms and swooped up into the heavens until swallowed by the mist. Strange. He'd never noticed a gravestone in the Garden of Rest before. As he reached for his lighter, the glow of its flame spread down to illuminate the words of the inscription. He read, blinked, read again. What? He held his breath. David Anthony Barlow. He coughed. Died. Aged 32. He spluttered on that very date. David Anthony Barlow. He lived his life too fast. His very own name. He turned, wheezing. He turned and ran. A rush of air from the surging traffic forced him back from the edge of the pavement. David punched the button on the crossing. He waited and waited. He willed himself to stay until finally, finally, the green man appeared. A lorry squealed to a stop, and he crossed in safety to the cemetery gate. Although it'd be quicker to follow the path to the right, past the tomb of the Raja, he swung left, past the notice board, the stones set in the ground like a board game, past the chapel, the boot scraper and bench, to the row of graves beyond which lay a Garden of Rest. He stopped to admire the angels, especially the one on the left, his favourite. And he wasn't alone. Further along, next to the glass atrium, next to the Spielman Centre, stood a young woman, with a pale face and long black hair. A Gothic frequenter of cemeteries, perhaps, associated with the tattoo place across the road. Although it wasn't raining, she held an umbrella, furled in her hand. It looked strangely bulky. She caught his eye, her red lips parting in a smile, then raised the umbrella above her head. As it burst open, it released a cascade of red, yellow and white flowers raining on her head. Strange, yes, but lovely. The beautiful, the unexplained. One white bloom had lodged behind her ear, in hair that caught the light the way only dark hair could. Pretty. But he mustn't dwell. He was on his way to see Susie, his sweetheart. So kind, so nice, so lovely, natural-looking, so blonde. He was sure he had something to ask Susie, but couldn't for the life of him remember what. The angel's eyes were downcast and closed, but seemed to be moving inside their stone lids. The effect unnerved him. He took out an imaginary cigarette, then reached for his lighter. He patted his top pocket. Empty. In a panic, he felt in all his other pockets, of which he seemed to have dozens at times like this. And just when he'd given up hope, he noticed, standing on the grave in front of him, the lighter. How had it got there? How strange and disrespectful. He picked it up, lit his invisible cigarette and put the lighter in his top pocket, patting it like a lucky charm. These imaginary ones were now his favourite brand. Not the tastiest or the most satisfying, but very low tar and couldn't be cheaper. Where had that gothic girl gone? This way, the way to Susie's? Handy. As he made his way along the path towards the gates to Cemetery Road, an inscription from a grave came to his mind. He wasn't sure where he'd seen it, yet there it was, in his head. And it would be fitting on any of the gravestones that surrounded him. Puffing away, breathing in the ethereal smoke, he smiled and walked on, until he melted into the mist. Say not in grief, they are no more, but in thankfulness, they were.